Morning. Today's daf Menachos Chaf Ches. We are in Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, and we are going to try to resolve the distinction between two brisos when it comes to the sprinkling of the paraduma. So we have a general idea of how it's to be done. The Torah gives us instructions that after shechting the paraduma, so the blood is to be sprinkled. It's fair to ask the question at this point in time: why are we talking about the paraduma in the third parak of Menachos? We thought this masechta had to do with mincha. So you're right, of course it does. But yesterday in Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph, we started the Mishnahs that deal with Ikuv. We talked about the essential nature of various mitzvahs, meaning there are mitzvahs that have multi components to them, and they're faceted. And so we're looking at the mitzvahs where the facets are really just part of one grand mitzvah, and as a result of that, each one of the facets is essential. And so the Mishnah gave us mitzvahs that have two components, three components, four components, mitzvahs that have seven components. And when sprinkling the blood of the paraduma, so that has seven components, otherwise known as seven sprinklings, and each one of them is essential. Once we've established that the seven sprinklings of the paraduma are essential, just like, and by the way, in Menachos, plenty of things of Menachos are found in the Mishnah. The Shtei Alechem, the Lechem Apanim, the bazichin, whatever. So there are many aspects of Menachos that are faceted and yet part of a singular mitzvah. But okay, but the Mishnah goes on to describe other mitzvahs of the Torah which are also just simply part of a larger mitzvah, and each one of them is significant. Okay, so that's how we got the paraduma. Anyway, we're in paraduma, so for the first part of today's daf, 10-15 minutes. So we're going to be looking to address a question and trying to resolve a difference between two different braisas. One braisa, you can see both braisas. The first one you can see on the very bottom of Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph. One braisa says that when sprinkling the blood of the paraduma, remember it's shechted outside of the Beis HaMikdash, to the east of the Beis HaMikdash, right, facing the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohen now is going to be headed, he's going to be facing west. And shechting the paraduma and sprinkling in the direction west, and he's going to be doing so seven times. We now know that those seven sprinklings are essential. Anything else about it essential? So the answer is yes. One braisa tells us that both kavana and direction are essential. Another braisa tells us that the shalom lishma is essential, but the kavana is not essential. Right? Shalom mechuvanos ksheros. That's what we learned in the second braisa. And now what we're looking to do is seek a way to resolve the distinction. Amar Rav Chisda. On the top of Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, so our first approach is going to be Rav Chisda. It's going to take us a little bit of time to get through his approach. Well, actually, he says in the beginning, but it just takes the time to unravel the position. So Kasha Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan. So it's Machlokes HaTanaim. The time the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Mechusrei Kapara. Now, this braisa, fair warning. The braisa over here seemingly has nothing to do with our discussion. It's a good warning. Where we want to end up with all this discussion is that there are going to be two positions. One is that you must sprinkle the blood of the paraduma in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash. Failure to do so will be a psul. And the other position is it's a mitzvah, but it's not likuva. That's where we want to end up. And how we're going to end up there, it's going to be a little bit of a circuitous path. Let's go. So, mechusar kapar shnichnasu lazara. So if I have somebody who's mechusar kapar, which means to say that he is almost done with his tahara process, but the only thing that's missing is that on day 8, he has not brought his karbanos. Such a person is called mechusar kapara. If he goes into the azara bishogi chayev, so if he goes so inadvertently, he's going to be subject to a liability. It would have been a courage penalty if done intentionally. If done now undone unintentionally, he'd be subject to bring a carbon chatas. Chayiv chatas. B'mezid anosh karetz, if he does so deliberately, he's going to be chayiv karetz. Vein tzarech lomar tful yom v'shar kol ha-tameim. Now, it goes without saying that a tful yom or anyone who's actually tameh, so obviously it will be an infraction if he goes into the Beis HaMikdash, like we just described. And certainly such an individual, b'shogeg, is going to bring a carbon chatas, and b'mezid is going to be chayiv karetz. Utahorim. Now the braisa over here talks about those who are tahor. Tahor over here in the context of this particular braisa is talking about a kohen who's tahor. Shenichnasu lefnim mechitzas am lahechal kulo be'arba'im. if he goes anywhere within the Heichal, and the Kohen is going into the Heichal, and he's going in there with no purpose. So it's a purposeless entrance into the Heichal. So subject to Malkus, rather amazing when you think about it. He's a Kohen. He's entitled into the Beis HaMikdash. But if he's going into the actual edifice itself with no purpose, subject to lashes. Mi Beis HaParochas HaPnei HaKapares. Now, if he goes beyond the curtain, meaning he goes into the Kosher Kadosh and Misa, so that is subject to Misa B'dei Shemayim. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol HaHeichal Kulo. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the entire Heichal, Kulo Umi Beis HaParochas Ba'arba'im. So if he goes into the entirety of the Heichal, and right up to the curtain, that's subject to Malkus, El Panea Kaporis B'Misa, and if he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that is subject to Misa. Misa B'Dei Shemayim. So, B'Mai Kamiflagi, now the Gemara says, okay, so we have a Machlokis HaTanayim, exactly one stop, one a Kohen, who is making a purposeless wandering into the Heichal, and exactly within the Heichal itself, whether or not he's going to be subject to just Malkus, or is it going to be up to Misa? So the Gemara says, what is that the key, what is the Nikudas HaMachlokas? So Baha'i Kram. Vayomar Shema Moshe Dabar El Arnachich V'lo Yavo, V'al Yavo, B'chol Eis El HaKodesh, Mi Beis LaParoches, El Penei HaKapors, Asher Al HaAron, V'lo Yamos. Okay, the beginning of Parshas Achremos. So the first thing the Torah tells us before going through all the details of the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadosh in Yom Kippur is that first the Torah sets the stage and the context. Generally speaking, a Kohen has no business going there. That's the starting point. Now when we say there, so there actually are three areas that are detailed in the Pasuk. Let's go over the Pasuk again. So we have area number one, which is Kodesh. Kodesh is generally speaking the actual edifice itself. It's the Heichal. Mi Beis LaParoches. So Beis LaParoches now tells us to go past the curtain, meaning into Kodesh HaKadoshim, and El Penei HaKapores, and facing the Aron. So not only are you in Kodesh HaKadoshim, but you're also directly opposite the Aron. So, Rabbanan Savre. So basically we have three zones over here. Rabbanan Savre, El HaKadosh B'lo Yavo. So, and if you look carefully at the psukim, look before and after the three areas are outlined. I'm sorry, I should have made this clear before going on. Go back a couple lines in the Gemara. Al yavo b'chol eis, that's a lav, right? So that's the al yavo. Then after mentioning the three zones, it's velo yamus, which is misa b'dei shemayim. So we have a lav before mentioning the three zones. We have three zones, the Kodesh, Beis HaParoches, and Penei HaKapores. And then at the end of the pasuk, we have Misa. And so now it's just a question of assignment. Which one is a lav? The lav is going certainly on A, on Kodesh. And the Misa is certainly going on Penei HaKapores, facing the Aron. And now it's just a question of where to put B. Is B going to be with Al Yavo, or is B going to be with Yamos? Good. That's that. And again, by the way, you have to wonder why are we here right now. So we're gonna come back to that. Rabbanan Savri Ala Kodesh B'lo Yavo. So Rabbanan take the Kodesh area and puts it and files it under the lav. Mi Beis HaParoches Ve'el Penei HaKapores B'lo Yamos. And Zone B and Zone C are going to go to the Misa. Rabbi Yehuda Savri Ala Kodesh Mi Beis HaParoches B'lo Yavo Ve'el Penei HaKapores B'lo Yamos. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. Take the B zone. That is the Beis LaParoches, just walking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, although you're not directly opposite the Aron, and that is going to be with the Misa. My time at the Rabbanan. So now let's make arguments for each position. Isa Kedachi Kedakama Rav Yehuda. Now, if Rav Yehuda is right, Lechtov Rechman Ela Kodesh Vel Pnei HaKapores. So the Torah could have just outlined two zones, didn't need three zones. Velo Baimi Beis LaParoches Ana Amina. And if the Torah would have just given us two zones, which is Kodesh, the Heichal, and facing the Kapores, so then that would have been enough. So Vanamina, Heichal Mechai Mi Beis HaParoches Mi Baye. If going into the Heichal would be subject to a Chiyuv, so walking into the Kodesh Kadoshim, I need a pasuk to tell me that. So Mi Beis HaParoches Dekatz Rachman Alameli. Why is the Torah giving me Zone B? So Shema Minah b'Misa. So Zone B is coming to tell me that it is Misa, meaning that only facing the Aron is going to be Misa, but Zone B is going to be a Lav. Rav Yehuda, Ikas Rechman Ela Kodesh Velo Kasa Mi Beis HaParochis, and Rav Yehuda's argument is as follows. If the Torah only would have said Kodesh, and the Torah would not have said Mi Beis HaParochis, I would have said my Kodesh, Mi Beis HaParochis. I would have said that Kodesh is talking about specifically being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ava Heichal, Lav, Nami, Lo. But just being in the Heichal, a purposeless entrance into the Heichal, that's nothing. It's not Misa, it's not even a Lav. So the Rabbanan, hahu lomatz isamar. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, I never would have entertained such an idea. Because the Heichal kulei ikrei Kodesh, because we know the entire Heichal is referred to as an area of Kodesh. Shenemra vihivdila parochas lachem in a Kodesh ben a Kodesh kadashim. We have a very clear pasuk that tells us that the Heichal is referenced as Kodesh. V'Rav Yehuda my taima. Now, let's go to Rav Yehuda. Okay, so, again, just setting ourselves up. The Torah mentions three zones. We have the zone of Kodesh, and Beis LaParoches, and Penea Kaporis. We know that Zone A is a Lav. We know that Zone C is a Misa Bidei Shemayim. And where does Zone B fit in? So far we have argued on behalf of the Chachamim that Zone B, meaning Beis LaParoches, going past the curtain, but not actually facing the Aron, so that is a Lav. That's a Chachamim. Rav Yehuda said no. Rav Yehuda says that once you go past the Paroches, you're a Kohen going past the Paroches, you are subject to Misa. Again, all this is talking about where it is a purposeless entrance. So, Rav Yehuda, my time Misa, kedakami Rabban Lechto Rechman Ela Kodesh, Umi Beis HaParoches. Meaning, if the Chachamim were right, the Torah would only have to write two zones, A and B. A, being in the Heichal. B, going past the Paroches. And that's it. And if going into the Beis HaParoches is subject to Misa, so the Penei Kaporos is obvious. So Penei Kaporos to Kutz Rachman Alam Lishma Menah Penei Kaporos be Misa be Beis HaParoches Bazara. So Rav Yehuda says, by virtue of the fact that the Torah introduces us to Zone B, it must mean that there must be a distinction between Zone B and Zone C, because otherwise, why would the Torah write it? So Zone B is a Lav, and Zone C is a Misa. So the Chachamim will tell you, I agree. You're right. Of course you're right. But why does the Torah say Apnei Kaparos? The Meute Derech Meshupash. In other words, it's not enough just to enter, but you must enter in the normal way of entrance. If you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in an unusual manner, scaling down from the ceiling or something along those lines, so you're not subject to the punishment. Kedetan de Rav Loz ben Yaakov el Pnei HaKaporos Kedma. Zebana Av. And here now we finally are going to get to the point. Meaning all this, of course, was important and significant, but in other words, in terms of what the Gemara wanted to glean from this Braisa. The Torah says el Pnei HaKaporos Kedma. And focus in keen on the word el. So you see the word Pnei, it means to the east. And as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the word El means that it has to be specifically towards, meaning, and there is no, it is meant only in the literal sense. V'rabanan El Lav Davka, and according to the Chachamim, the El over there is Lav Davka. Rabbi Yehuda Damar Al Pnei Kaparos Davka. Viza el nochach nami davka, v'rabbanan midahasam lav davka, achanami lav davka. And finally now, it was a long time to get to the point, but finally the Gemara got to the point, which is that now we see that there's a debate in terms of how to understand the word El. Is El to be understood literally, that it has to be towards, and it's no room for any other interpretation? Or no, does El mean a general idea of towards, but not literally in that direction? Now that we're here, so basically we're going to take that and transpose it to our discussion. We're talking about shechting the paraduma outside the Beis HaMikdash, and we're talking about kivun, kavana, that you need. In other words, that when you're sprinkling, you have to have in mind that this is a paraduma and no other carbon. Good. That everyone agrees to. Direction. So right now what the Gemara is suggesting is that the Torah gives us clear instruction with the paraduma, vihiza el nochach. El nochach. Habayis. The Torah says El towards. Now, does that mean literally that you must be facing the Beis HaMikdash with no room for negotiation? If you're facing any other direction, it's simply no good. That's one possibility. And you see that that's how Rabbi Yehuda understood the word El in the context of a Kohen walking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. El means literally towards, or meaning it has to, you have to go in the normal entrance. Or maybe no. Maybe El just simply means a general direction, a general sense of you recognize that you are facing the Beis HaMikdash, but does not literally mean in the direction. So that is what the Gemara now is proposing as a machlokes, as understanding the machlokes between the two brises. Maskif la Rav Yosef, la Rav Yehuda, mide el dafka. So mide el nafka. So al, right, we have in the small correction. Al nami dafka, el de mikta sheni de lo havi aron vekaparos achanami de lo avid hazaos. So the Gemara says, well, consider. We know in the second base of Mikdash there was no aron. One of the notable absences that existed in the second temple is that there was no Aaron. In fact, quite honestly, we have Gemaras that report that the Aaron was already placed into hiding already during the first Beis HaMikdash. But let's just focus on the second Beis HaMikdash. There was no Aaron. We also know that the Torah gives us clear instructions that the sprinkling that's done on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is on the Aaron, Al. So if you're telling me that the word El, according to one Tana, means to be taken literally, so that means that the word Al also means to be taken literally. So during the entire duration of Bayis Sheni, the Kohen Gadol goes in on Yom Kippur with the blood of the bull and of the goat, and now he's going to be sprinkling on what? Well, there's no Aron. Oh, so that means to say that he's not sprinkling? And the Gemara is asking this as that would be a seemingly a untenable position. So Amar Rava Barula, Amar Krav, V'chiperes es Mikdash HaKodesh, Makom HaMakudesh HaKodesh. So the Gemara says no. In other words, we're never going to entertain that because when the Torah talks about the sprinkling that is done in the Kodesh Kodashim on Yom Kippur, it says, V'chiper es mikdash, meaning, and the Gemara's understanding is, mikdash HaKodesh, b'makom ha-mikudash HaKodesh. It just simply has to be the place where it was designated for the location of the Aron, even though the Aron is not actually there. Okay, now I get to breathe. Okay, so now, when asked the question of, one brisa says that the Kohen, when sprinkling the blood of the Paraduma seven times in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash, if he's not facing the Beis HaMikdash, so is that disqualify the sprinkling? One brisa says yes, another brisa says no. And Rav Chista, over the entirety of Chav Zayin Amud Beis, outlines that this is really a machlokas tanaim in terms of whether El is literal or not literal. Okay, summary of the entire Amud. Rava Amar, now we are on the last line of the Amud. Rava Amar Hava HaRabbana. Now, both positions really accord with the opinion of the Chachamim. Ha Dekai Mizrach Umara V'Adi. Ha Dekai Tzafim V'Daron V'Adi. It's just a question now of your orientation, which direction you're facing. Rashi on the top of the Amud goes on to explain. Ha Dekai Kohen Mizrach Umar V'Adi V'im Amad Kohen B'Fan of Lemara V'Achor V'Lemizrach V'Zah Shikach Mitzvah Zafilo Eina Mechuvanam Keneged HaPesach Ksheros V'Adit Nipsulos Dekai Tzafim V'Darin Shalok Kimitzvah So V'Adi. Meaning, basically, let's take out our compass. Okay? Again, the Kohen, where is he right now? He's to the east of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. The discrepancy over here between the two brises is like this. In terms of a compass, he has to be facing west. Now, does that mean that if you were to draw a line directly west of where he's standing, and you're not actually hitting the Beis HaMikdash, is that going to be okay? And the answer is yes. Meaning, kavana over here, or let me say it better, kivun over here, direction, just simply means that you have to be in a westbound direction. Back to the east, facing west, and that is what one Bryce is saying is essential. That part's essential. Drawing a line from where you're standing and you're not actually hitting the Beis HaMikdash, okay, that's okay. If, however, you are, let's say, directly to the east of the Beis HaMikdash, but in terms of your own orientation, you are either facing north or south, here doesn't matter. In other words, facing north or back to the south or vice versa, so that's no good. That's the brisa that says that's no good. So in other words, the distinction between the two brises is that you have to be facing west. Okay. Amar Mar. Ushibifnim shebemetzor shalom lishman psulos. Shalom mechuvanos ksheros. Now the Gemara says that we also saw in the brisa that when it comes to the mitzorah, So is if you're not facing the right direction, it's okay. And once again, we have another stira regarding whether or not the direction of the sprinkling of the oil of the mitzvah is essential. So the Gemara says, this too is subject to a machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer, demakish ashel mechatos. Rabbi Eliezer, taking us all the way back to the beginning of Zvachim, Seder Kachim, where Rabbi Eliezer says that the halachas that are true by chatos are also true by an asham as well. So makish nami log la asham. So just like a chatos is essential, meaning regarding kavana, and an asham also is included with that. And the mitzvah not only brings the carbon asham, but he also brings oil, a log shemen, in conjunction with the asham. So basically now we're making two jumps, from chatos to asham, and from asham to the oil. Rabbanan lo makshin. And according to the Chacham, no such hekesh. Ula Rabbi Eliezer, Ula Rabbi Eliezer, v'chi davar alame behekesh, chozem alame behekesh. Then wait 1 second. We are talking about karbanos. We are in Kachim right now. And we have a rule that we discussed extensively back in Zvachim. And that is that in Kachim, you cannot make a double jump in terms of drashas. You can't go hekesh to hekesh. So over here, you're telling me that kavana by the oil of the mitzvah is essential. Why? Because for Rabbi Eliezer, we're jumping from chatos to asham. That's one jump. And then we're going to go from the carbon asham to the oil associated with the carbon asham. That's your second jump. And you can't do that in Kachim. Elam Rava Havah Rabbanan, Kan Lahachshir, Kan Lahartzos. So the Gemara says, okay. And the distinction between the two is going to be a question of whether, I'm sorry, both positions are going like the Chachamim. So the and it's just a question of sprinkling for hartsa'a, in other words, to create ritsui, excuse me, versus whether we're just talking about the basic validity. In terms of the validity of the log shemen, so you don't have to have the kavana, meaning that the kohanim can enjoy and eat it, and eat from the log shemen. Remember, we discussed that the shayare log shemen, that whatever's left over after the log shemen, there's an application that's done to the mitzvah. There are sprinklings that are done in the direction of the base of mikdash, and then whatever's left of the log shemen, so that's given to the kohanim to eat. Salad dressing, right. And so, vis-a-vis not having the right kavana, so that's not going to disqualify the oil vis-a-vis the kohanim. The kohanim are going to still eat it. But vis-a-vis ritsui for the mitzvah, so that you need kavana. Okay, and the Gemara says, and that's how we're going to resolve the discrepancy. Okay, wonderful. Adkan. That takes us to the end of a lengthy discussion regarding the essential nature of the sprinkling of the paraduma, the sprinkling of the oil of the mitzvah. We talked about kavana, we talked about kivan. Okay, and obviously a very intricate discussion in the Gemara. We continue now in the Mishnah Sanhedrin Chaf Ches, and for the duration of the third parak of Menachos and the fourth parak as well. So we are going to now leave the world of Menachos and just basically take a tour. For now, we're going to take a tour of the menorah. Today, we're going to be talking about the menorah. We're going to be talking about the chatzotzros. Why is it coming up over here in Menachos? And it's very simple. Because we're talking about things that are made of that are multifaceted, have multiple components, and we talk about the essential nature of these components. So the menorah has seven branches. So it's not just that the seven branches are nice, and if I make a menorah out of six or out of five, so, you know, I got most of it, and therefore it's okay. No. The seven branches of menorah are essential, and so therefore it comes up over here in the Mishnah in Menachos. Now the other things are mentioned in this Mishnah as well, which we're going to be discussing, but today's topic is going to be mostly revolving around the menorah. Shibakanei menorah Ma'akman says that the seven branches of the menorah are li'ikuva. You must make seven. Shibanei Rustem Ma'akman says that on the top of each one of the branches you have a ner. Now it's funny, we generally translate the ner as a flame. It's not. The ner over here is the cup that's holding the flame. Okay, so seven neros on the top of each one of the branches, and again, they're essential as well. When writing a mezuzah on klaf, so there are two parshios that are written in the mezuzah, Shema and Vehaya. And one without the other is not a mezuzah. Even one letter is going to be ma'akev on the mezuzah. Dal parsha shebitfil ma'akvan zezeh. There are four parshios that are in the mezuzah, and they're ma'akev. On the shel rosh, they are divided into four compartments. On the shel yad, they are in one. They're on one cloth in one compartment. More to be discussed on tefillin and mezuzahs. on mezuzah and tefillin later in this parak. Afilu ksav echad me'akvan. You're missing a letter in the parshios of the tefillin, and they are going to be. If one letter is missing in the tefillin, so it's going to be ma'akiv. Dalet tzitzios ma'akva zuzu she'ar ba'asam mitzvah achas. So putting the tzitzis on the four corners of your garment, if you're wearing a four-corner garment, so they are essential to one another. It's one mitzvah. And Rabbi Shmuel Amar arba asan arba mitzvos. And Rabbi Shmuel says that the four are really four mitzvos. Much more to be discussed later in the parak regarding mezuzah, tefillin, and tzitzis. My taima. But for the rest of today, we're going to be focusing on the menorah, and we're going to be talking about the essential nature of the menorah. So my taima, why is it that the seven branches of the menorah are essential? The kane ha-menorah, havayik sivbahu. So the Torah uses the word havaya. And again, this goes back to what we've been discussing throughout this parak, that when the Torah wants to tip us off to an essential nature of a mitzvah, even though it is part of a mitzvah, it's a component of a mitzvah, but without it, you simply don't have the mitzvah. So we looked at the key words in the Torah. One of them, which keeps recurring, is the idea of havaya. When the Torah says, this is the way it is, in other words, you have the verb of haya conjugated in any form, so that what the Torah is speaking to is this idea of essentiality. I don't know if that's a word, but for today, it'll work. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa. Menorah haisa ba mina eshes u mina zav. So, rule number one when it comes to the menorah is that they come from one block of metal, preferably gold. Now, I say preferably, because I know the Gemara that's coming up. Asa mina grutaus psula. Now, if let's say you piece it together from scraps, so it's disqualified. Mishar mina matchos kshera. However, if I use, instead of gold, I use a block of another metal, that is bidyeved acceptable. Mishar mina grutaus psula dichsiv. So now the Gemara was going to try to wrap its head around the idea that there's a distinction between made out of one block, one chunk of metal, versus made out of scraps, where that's a deal breaker. However, using other metals is acceptable. What's the difference? So the Gemara says, well, min agrutos psul dechsiv miksha v'havaya. So the fact that it has to be made out of one block metal is because the Torah uses the words miksha, meaning hammered out. You're hammering it from one solid piece, and we also have the key word of havaya. By the way, the Gemara does not quote the Pesukim many of the times over here. The Gemara expects us to know the Pesukim. You could see Rashi for a citation of the Pesukim. Okay, obviously I'm moving quickly over here as through the daf, so I'm not citing all the Pesukim. Okay, just so we all know.
Gold is also mentioned.
Gemara knows. Okay, Sharmine Maskos Nami Zahava Havaya. So the Gemara says, okay, but the word Zav is used in the Torah describing the menorah, and the Torah uses the word Havaya as well. So Amakra Te Aseha L'Rabos Sharmine Matros. Now we're going to learn later in today's daf. Really, when we look at the pasuk regarding the construction of the menorah, it's a klal upratu klal. Right now, the Gemara doesn't go through the entirety of the structure of the pasuk. We're going to do that a little bit later on, but it's klal upratu klal, and so therefore it comes to teach us that gold is an example, but you could use other metals as well. Ve'emel rabos grutaus. Well, as long as we're being inclusive over here, why not include also scrap? Lo sakadacha da mitshak siva havaya. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Torah says the word havaya regarding hammering out, meaning hammering it out from one block of metal. That's an essential nature. That's ma'akev. The Gemara says te'aseh nami amikshak siv. So the Gemara says, okay, but te'aseh is also going on miksha, meaning that the te'aseh, which we use as a ribui, is also going on miksha, but in other words, but maybe it should be golden to the exclusion of any other metal. So the Gemara says, miksha la'akiv. It says the word miksha twice, and the Torah is saying that hammering out of one block, that is absolutely essential. Zav zami nami la'akiv. Yeah, you look in the Torah over there, it says zav more than once, it says zav twice over there in the parsha of menorah, perichav hay of truma. So the Gemara says, hi mai. So the Gemara says, look, I know what the conclusion is. The conclusion is, it has to be made out of one block of metal. That has to. In terms of the type of metal, preferably gold. And how do I know that this is the right conclusion? Then you'll understand the drasha. We haven't said the drasha yet, but once we'll say over the drasha, then you'll get it. But Eli Yamar Minagurtas Ksher Mishaminematchos Psula Zav Zav Miksha Miksha Mai Darashtabe. But if you go in the opposite direction, that gold is what is absolute, as an absolute requirement, and the fact that you come in out of scraps, that's okay. So the Gemara says, but then we're not going to understand the drasha. Okay, we keep talking about this drasha. What drasha are we talking about? My drasha, the Tanya. Kikar zahav tahor yaseh osa es kol ha-kelim ha-ela. The Torah says that when you're using gold, it must be made out of kikar. Kikar is a weight. It is a known weight of the time in the Torah. It's somewhere in the range of 1,500 to 2,000 troy ounces. Not that that means anything to me, but in other words, it's right. So, but kikar is a specific quantifiable weight. And zahav is gold. And now the drasha goes like this. Ba zahav ba kikar. So when you're using gold, so then you have to work with the given weight, right? The known quantity that the Torah says. Eino ba zahav, but if you're not going to use gold, so then eino ba kikar. So it has to be made out of one block of metal, but it doesn't have to be a kikar. Oh, okay, good. Now that's the drasha. Now that drasha only makes sense if you could use other metals. If you can't use other metals, that drasha literally means nothing to us. That's exactly the point of the Gemara. So Gevia Kaftara Paracheha. The Torah also talks about the various ornaments that are put on the menorah. There are cups and knobs and flowers. These are the various the hood ornaments, if you will, of the menorah. And Bazahav ba gvim kaftim prachim and Bazav in ba gvim kaftim prachim. These ornaments are only a necessary component of the menorah when made out of gold. If, however, made out of any other metal, you don't need these ornaments. Okay, the emanami Bazahav ba kanim in Bazav in ba kanim. So the Gemara says, okay, look, you're telling me now that if it's made out of gold, so there are a number of things now that become an essential part of the menorah. Notably, the ornaments. Notably, the weight. And you're telling me that if we make it out of another metal, so now we lose the requirement of, we lost a weight requirement. There's no absolute weight requirement. And we also lost the ornaments. Why don't we make the following argument? If I made it out of another metal, I also doesn't have to be made out of seven branches. One branch would be fine. The Gemara says, not acceptable. Untenable position. Hahu pamut mikre. You don't call that a menorah. A menorah, by its very definition, is a multi-branched candelabra. If it's just one stick going up, if it's a candlestick going up, it's just by definition not a menorah.
When it says branches coming off menorah.
Right. I hear you. Okay. The zeh ma'aseh ha-menorah miksha zahav ba. I'm sorry. Miksha zahav. And so now the Gemara is going to spend some time describing the menorah. Ba'azav ba-miksha, eno ba-zav, eno ba-miksha. So the Gemara says that if it's coming out of gold, it has to be hammered out of one piece. But if it's not made out of gold, it doesn't have to be hammered out of one piece. Miksha de sefer lamayasa, lemute chatzotzos. And as far as the second miksha is concerned, so that is coming to make a differentiation between the menorah and the chatzotzos. Chatzotzos are the trumpets that are used in the that were used in the midbar, and they were also used in the base of mikdash as well. The Torah, when describing the trumpets, also uses the term miksha. It has to be hammered out of a block of silver. Detanya. Chatzosos hayubai mina eshos mina kesef. One block of metal, silver. Asumina grutaus ksherim. Now, when it comes to the chatzosos, you can make it out of scrap. Mishar mina matchos psulim, but you cannot make it out of any other metal. So here by the chatzosos, it's basically the inversion of the menorah. In that, the type of metal that you use, that's essential. The fact that it has to be made out of one block versus made out of scrap, flexible. Lichatchila, out of one block. But you can make it out of scraps. Umayishna mishar minei matchos psulim dechsev kesev avaya. Mina grutaos nami mikshev avaya. So again, the Gemara says, I don't understand, why should that be? The Torah uses the word silver, and it's essential. The Torah uses grutaos, scraps, I'm sorry, kesev avaya mina grutaos nami mikshev avaya. So scraps, how can you use scraps? The Torah says miksha, knock it out, hammer it out of one piece, and the Torah uses the word savaya. So the Gemara says, mi erechman agabe menorah, miksha hi v'lo chatzotzos. So the Gemara says, exactly. Meaning, if that's the only information we had, you'd be absolutely correct. By virtue of the fact that by the menorah, the Torah says it can't be made out of scrap, and the Torah says hi, it means that this is a halacha specific to menorah, and it doesn't apply to chatzotzos. The menorah you cannot make out of scrap metal, piece together out of scraps. The chatzotzos you may. Ten rabbanu kol hakelim sha'asa Moshe k'sherim lo k'sherim ledoros. Moshe makes a kli for the Beis Hamikdash. It is both usable for his generation and future generations. However, oddly enough, chatzotzos k'sherim lo p'sul sedoros. Moshe making the chatzotzos is only good for his generation. The chatzotzos for future generations has to be recreated. Now, why should that be? The Gemara wants to know. Chatzotzos my tam ilay medam akras lecha lecha v'lo ledoros. Maybe because the Torah says when introducing us to the mitzvah of the chatzotzos, it says lecha, and lecha means to you, Moshe, but not to future generations. Elam yata v'asisa lecha aron eitz hachinami delecha v'lo ledoros. What about other kelim where you have the word lecha, and you're going to arrive at the same conclusion? So ela ilamandam lecha mishalcha ilamandam kaviyocha b'shalchan yirotzi yosim mishalahem. So the Gemara says, no, the word lecha over there, there are two possible ways to darshan the word lecha. Rashi over here quotes the beginning of Masechta Yuma. We saw these drushes over there. Lecha can mean that it comes out of your pocket, meaning Moshe has to privately fund it. Or lecha can be understood as HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that really I would like it to come from you, even though it really comes from public money. But in other words, but lecha does not mean that it's limited to Moshe's generation. So the Gemara says the reason why we know that when it comes to the chatzotzos, when Moshe makes them, it is only for his generation and not for future generations, is based on the double language of lecha mentioned by the chatzotzos. So here a b'risa is reported in front of Rav Yosef. The b'risa reads like this: menorah, one block of metal, preferably gold. Now, if you make it out of silver, so that's okay. Not the best, but it's okay. However, and if it's made out of either tin, lead, or any other kind of alloy, Rebbe posts Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, machshir. So Rebbe says it's disqualified, and Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda says it's acceptable. If it's made out of either wood or bone or glass, so it is going to be disqualified. Rav Yosef, here's the Bryson, Rav Yosef patently rejects this version of the Braisa. Amalei mai daitech, amalei bein maru bein mar, klalu prati darshe, mi omar savar mar apram mefur shal matechitz, av kol shal matechitz, amar savar mar apram mefur shal chashuv, av kol davar chashuv. So Rav Chanan now explains his version of the Braisa. The methodology of how we darshan the pasuk is klalu prat, uklal. And we all know klalu prat uklal basically goes like this. We have a generality, we have something specific, and we have a generality. And we know that when the Torah gives us a specific, so that means that what we are supposed to do is look at the example and extract the characteristic of the example. Well, the example of the Torah in the case of the menorah is that it has to be made out of gold. What's the characteristic of gold? Well, so that's the machlokas amongst the Tanayim. One position is, the characteristic is that gold is a metal, anything which is a metal. And the other position is that no, the characteristic of gold is that it's a precious metal. And so therefore, it has to be something which is a precious metal, i.e. silver. Lead and tin and other alloys, they're no good. Good. That's right now the way Rav Chanan understands the Braitha. Amar Lei, so Rav Yosef says to Rav Chanan, Samidid Chami Kamididi. So here's what you'll do. You'll take your Braitha and basically, you'll rip it up. Your Braitha is not a good version. I have a Braitha, same Achlokas. However, slight variation. You'll see my Bryce in just a moment. My Bryce is more authoritative. Okay? Ditanya. By the way, the Gemara end of Brachas, right? The tail end of Brachas. Remember? Right, Rav Yosef was compared to Sinai, meaning he had he forgot everything and he relearned everything, but he had an encyclopedic knowledge of all Mishnayos and all Bryces. Right? The Gemara over there debated at the end of Brachas whether having Bekias, having a broad knowledge of all the Mishnayos and Braisos is superior, or having keen insight and the ability to give analytics, is that superior, right? And Rav Yosef was Sinai. Ditanya, klei shari sha'asin shal eitz Rabbi Poster Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. If I have a klei shari made out of wood is the machlokus. B'maika mifligi Rabbi Darsha kol prat of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Darsha ribu emiut. And the Gemara now says that really what's at the core of the machlokas over here is, which methodology are we going to use? Are we going to use kalaprat or ribu emiut? And here we go, we see this so many times. Rebbe darshi kalaprat. So Rebbe takes the position, just like Rebbe Shmuel, that his methodology is kalaprat. V'asisa menorah klal. And here we go. Now we finally see the klal of prat being applied to the pasuk regarding menorah. The Torah says, make a menorah. That's a general. Zahav tahor prat. Gold. That's the example. That's the specific. Miksha te aseha ha menorah. Make it out of one block, this menorah. Back to our generality. So klal uprat uklal, I'm sorry, klal uprat, sorry, chazru klal. Klal uprat uklal, iata dan elakein uprat ma uprat mefur shal mateches av kosha mateches. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, darish ribui umiyut. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, darshins, he uses the methodology of ribui umiyut. V'yasisa menorah riba, zav tor umiyut. Mikshati aseha menorah chazav riba. Riba umiyut v'riba, riba hakol. And as we've discussed time and again, and let's go over this again, the distinction between klal uprat versus ribui umiyut. Klal uprat tells me that we have a generality, and then prat tells us, and here is the example. And then when we go a klal again, so what we're able to do is take the example and expand it a little bit. Okay. Ribui miyut, it's just the opposite. Ribui miyut is, first the Torah gives us a generality, which includes everything within the generality. Miyut tells me that I'm going to take the generality, I'm just going to shrink it a little bit. And then the next ribui, what it comes to do is it comes to re-expand it. Obviously not to the same parameter that we started off with, but in other words, obviously now we're dealing with a much broader area in the middle. And so the Gemara says, "Umay Rabbi, Rabbi call me lei, umay miyut, miyut call kli shalcheres." So therefore, if you use a methodology of ribu miyut, so you make a menorah basically out of anything that is substantial, it's going to be good. The only thing excluding is the kli cheres, earthenware. So Rav Chanan says to Rav Yosef, okay, you have one version of the Braisa, I have my version. What makes your version better than my version? It's such a fair question. And Lo Sagadacha Detanya. So Rav Yosef comes back and says, yeah, but I also have another Braisa as well. And again, now you get to see what happens when you have a wide knowledge of Mishnayos and Braisos. So you prove your points by just simply citation. And here Rav Yosef says, I have another braisa. Ein lo zav mevi shal kesef shal nechosh shal brazav shal bediv shal oferes. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda machshir af bishal eitz. So here we have another braisa where if you use a metal, any metal, silver, lead, tin, alloy, according to everybody, it's good. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda allows even wood. So you see over here that as far as metals are concerned, everyone's in agreement that any metal would be fine. Only when you move past metal and you move on to the material of wood, then and only then do we have a machlokas. The Braisa doesn't say. But what's clear from the Braisa is that when it comes to metal, regardless of which metal it is, no debate. The debate only starts with wood. V'tanya idach, another braisa. Lo yase adam beis tavnis. You know what? Let's stop over here. V'tanya idach. We'll start with this braisa tomorrow. Okay. So where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So we today finished off the discussion of which way to face when doing the paraduma. Well, we know actually you face the area, the direction of the base of Mikdash. Is that essential or non-essential? Two braisos. How to resolve the two braisos? Rav Chista and Rava each give an approach on how to approach these two braisos. We started the Mishnah that talked about the seven branches of the menorah being essential, and other things being essential. We talked about tefillin in the Mishnah, tefillin, mezuzah, tzitzis. But as long as we moved on to the topic of the menorah, so the entirety of today's daf dedicated itself to the discussion of the menorah. The seven branches of the menorah are essential. How do I know that? Which material do I use to make the menorah? The answer is gold. But what else is acceptable? Silver for sure. Other metals. So we have a machlokas amarayim, whether or not other machlokas are subject to a machlokas tanayim. So, and Rav Yosef is of the contention that any metal is good, b'di'evin, according to all opinions. Only when you move past the metals and you get to wood, then and only then do we have a machlokas tanayim.